leading those who were lost, helping the weak, and when passing by the sellers and traders, he recited this verse for them. تِلْكَ الدَّارُ الْآخِرَةُ نَجْعَلُهَا لِلَّذِينَ لَا يُرِيدُونَ عُلُوًا فِي الْأَرْضِ وَلَا فَسَادًا. The abode of hereafter we assigned for those who do not intend to exalt themselves in the earth, nor to make mischief. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode as well. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins. Things that I've said, no, they don't mean nothing at all. Time just flies by when I'm with the one I love. Even sunlight makes it through the dark in a cold, misty sky. But when I'm all alone tonight, you'll be right here by my side. No matter what the world brings, and even if the birds won't sing, better times are on their way, cause I know you're there. And even if the sun won't smile, I know it's been a while since I felt any light, but I know you're there. Good times, they never last, I wish they were around. Their time is past us now, still I haven't made a sound. Some folks are dying to live, and others live to die. But somehow when I think of you, I smile deep inside. No matter what the world brings, and even if the birds won't sing, better times are on their way, cause I know you're there. And even if the sun won't smile, I know it's been a while since I felt any light, but I know you're there. The grass was greener on the other side. The world just gray now, but we out of time. And when I lie alone and stare into the dark, I remember what you said, I watched the stars spark. I know you're right here by my side. No matter what the world brings, and even if the birds won't sing, better times are on their way, cause I know you're there. And even if the sun won't smile, I know it's been a while since I felt any light, but I know you're there. No matter what the world brings, and even if the birds, times are on their way, cause I know you're there. And even if the sun won't smile, I know it's been a while since I felt any light, but I know you're there.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're tuned into Iran Radio. Let's quickly navigate what's coming up next. We're excited to present these programs, so please stay with us. time to delve into economic divide. If you are interested in economic or business issues, then this program is definitely for you. Top experts on the economy give expert analysis and commentary on the biggest business and economic stories of the day. Mind-provoking insights into the economic issues. Then it's time to listen to Spring of Truth. This program features English translations of selected powerful statements and speeches from the founding father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini. May Allah bless his soul. What's next up? We are featuring a collection of our finest radio productions. These are specially curated segments designed to entertain, educate, and inform you, dear listeners. So keep us company. Up next is Economic Divide.
Economic Divide.
War is a racket. Everybody knows that, and no one has lived up to that slogan more than a superpower which is now declining, and that is the U.S. Clinging on to the power is the U.S. goal, and doing that militarily is the only way that the U.S. knows is in coercing countries into following its own foreign policy directive. Today's headlines, truth behind Israeli aggression against Iran under the false pretext of preventing Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons, was the U.S. decision to bomb Iran and greenlight Israel aggression against Iran driven by outside factors, U.S. military complex profiting from war. Could the outside factors have anything to deal with the U.S. military complex? The thirst for profiting from war is a desire that cannot be erased or uprooted. Forever war scenario. For a U.S. president that preached on ending wars, this U.S. president appears to be pro-war. There are many signs that point to how the U.S. may be getting itself drawn into that scenario with Iran. We're going to be discussing those points and a whole lot more with Natalie Strecker, human rights activist, and Ed Opperman, author and host of the radio talk show The Opperman Report.
Thank you so very much for inviting me on this show. It's a real huge privilege to be able to speak to you today. It's very obvious that it had a huge amount of influence that Trump really was pressured. I mean, let's remember that Trump stood as the anti-war candidate. No new wars in the Middle East. That's why actually many people ended up supporting him. It's very clear, I think, all the information that is coming out, that there was a huge amount of pressure put on Trump to commence a hot war with Iran, obviously at the behest of Israel. Let's not forget that Trump was funded $230 million by the Israel lobby. He's a bought candidate. It's so funny sometimes that people think of him as the anti-deep state, the anti-elite candidate, when it was so clear that he was bought. War is profitable. We're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But, you know, they make billions from war. So I think there's a huge amount of pressure. But additionally, I think Trump is a businessman. If he recognises that there's a lot of money to be made from the destruction of communities, I mean, he's up for it.
According to Israeli sources, the damages to the Israeli regime as a result of the aggression against Iran include several categories, $2.9 billion, which includes military costs like munitions, air operations, and preparations for the reserve units. These are important since it points to military equipment arsenals used in this aggression. the U.S. military complex, along with ones from other countries, has been hard at work in their military factories, especially since July the 1st. 821 tons of weapons and equipment have been sent to Israel from the U.S., U.K., and Germany.
Is hugely profitable. I think just in 2023, I think it was something like 620 plus billion was made through war. It's become its own industry. So of course there's this support, and Israel is the attack dog of the US. I mean, it's difficult sometimes to tell. I just see it as a satellite state of the US. But if you think of Mike Gallagher, I believe he's the gentleman who, the individual, shall we say, who now works, was a former congressman and now works as the head of defense for Palantir, which of course Palantir, the CEO of, had stated that actually bad times for the world are good for them. And this is the horrors that we are witnessing. We know Palantir has been used in terms of identifying targets in Palestine, rating them, Meta being used, of course, WhatsApp, to actually target individuals. When we recognise the billions that are made on the broken, you know, bodies, minds, and communities, you realise why there is this appetite, because we're dealing with psychopaths. I think it's really important. I mean, the fact that in the run-up, obviously, you saw lots of things on Fox News, you know, commentator after commentator. There was another general, I think Keane, I can't remember his name. You know, well, he used to be on the board of, I mean, he was calling for the use of, I think it was called B2s, the horrific weapons that were used to target Iran. But he was on the boards.
This is a social section of the program. Certain U.S. politicians have beaten the drums of war against Iran for a very long time, like Senator Lindsey Graham. This post said, regardless of your thoughts on the Iran-Israel conflict, Senator Lindsey Graham is nothing more than a warmonger. He has built his career off the back of the industrial military complex. Senator Graham has never met a war he didn't like.
To our friends in Israel, finish the job. Do what you have to do to bring about the regime change that will allow your children to sleep through the night. To the American people, wake up. Understand what we're fighting. The Ayatollah is not normal. These are not normal people.
Here we go. Trump folded like a paper napkin. We are officially in the Iran-Israel war, which we have no business being involved in. It's business as usual for the military-industrial complex. Ending the endless wars was a big, fat lie. Israel had to make intensive use of the most costly and rare types of munitions currently in use by any Western military. First, the THAAD and Arrow 3 interceptors, and second, the kind of air-to-ground missiles that you shot from many hundreds of kilometers away, if not thousands. These kinds of weapon systems are extremely expensive to produce and also quite scarce. Even the U.S. doesn't produce more than a few hundred ultra-sophisticated interceptors a year, even if Israel is capable of producing a couple of hundred more itself. How the weapons industry pushed Trump toward war with Iran. The president watched a lot of Fox News, apparently, which was dominated by defense contractor voices advocating U.S. strikes.
The influence of the arms industry over the news media here in America is phenomenal. Especially on the Sunday morning talk shows, which are on every network, not just Fox, even the more liberal or progressive networks also, are funded by advertisers that are arms manufacturers.
We can't have the world's most dangerous regime have the world's most dangerous weapons. We're protecting ourselves, but by doing so, we're protecting many others.
This is a Fox News alert. News from the President of the United States that there has been an attack inside Iran. Just moments ago, President Donald Trump putting out on Truth Social, we have completed our very successful attack on 3 nuclear sites in Iran.
And sometimes these arms manufacturers, these arms industries, will even provide grants for nonprofit reporting. Now, you have to wonder, why are they doing this? Why would an arms manufacturer want to advertise on a news program? Clearly, they're not trying to talk me into buying a stealth bomber or a rocket, right? They're trying to influence me in some other way. They're trying to convince me that war is a good idea. And their only motivation for having more and more war is their own profits and the bottom line of their shareholders.
But don't forget the U.S. was also involved. The mission was led by 6 B-2 stealth bombers, each costing over $7 million for the operation. Beyond the bombers, the operation involved 125 other aircraft, including F-22s, F-35s, tankers, and support planes. When combined, the flight hours and logistics pushed the cost toward $170 million. Additionally, over 15 Tomahawk cruise missiles were launched from naval platforms, costing around $2 million each. The total estimate, factoring hidden costs and personnel, likely exceeds $200 million and may approach $300 million.
The guests on these shows, often either current politicians or current political office holders, or just recently former left office, very often they're lobbyists for these arms manufacturers. So either when they're in office or after they've left office, they have a motivation to support these arms industries and these weapons manufacturers. What happens is these large industries that build these weapons, they'll have factories and offices in every city, in every state throughout the country. So when these politicians are running for office, they can say, oh, look, I brought this big jobs producer, this big factory, got them this big contract to build weapons here in our city. I got you jobs. First, the foreign countries, like Israel, for instance, they'll lobby Congress for these funds for foreign aid, foreign military aid. Israel, as a matter of fact, gets $4 billion a year in U.S. military aid. But that money isn't just a check that goes to Israel. That money goes to local arms manufacturers and local factories that build these weapons that then send them to Israel. So it's a whole circular beneficial for all of them for these wars to continue year after year after year.
This is the Info News section of the program. Trump's Big Beautiful Bill. Who stands to gain from this Big Beautiful Bill and who may struggle? The net income for the top 20% of earners would increase by nearly $13,000 per year. People at the lowest end of the income ladder would be worse off because of the cuts to the nation's safety net program, particularly Medicaid and food stamps. U.S. third party, Elon Musk revives the third party after one big beautiful bill passes. The billionaire Tesla founder has clashed with President Donald Trump over the bill's increase to the U.S. deficit. Dollar value. Dollar has endured the worst year since 1973. The greenback has dropped over 10% in 2025 amid U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs and rising deficits. The U.S. dollar has fallen more than 10% against major currencies in the first half of 2025, marking its worst start to a year since 1973. Russian reserves. Putin explains that what will happen if West robs Russia's reserves. Seizing the frozen funds would hasten the shift to regional payment systems, Putin has said. An estimated $300 billion worth of Russian sovereign assets were frozen by the West following the escalation of the Ukraine conflict in February 2022.
Financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
This is the in-depth section of the program. If it's one thing to attribute to Israel, it's how it can coax its ally, the U.S., to give it arms and lots of it. It has been doing so for the past 20 months when it comes to the genocidal war against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, and now it has opened the Pandora's box against Iran with the blessing of the U.S. military-industrial complex. Israeli aggression against Iran was a multi-layered one that involved different types of operations within an operation. The overall name is called Rising Lion, with Operations Red Wedding and Operation Narnia. If Red Wedding sounds familiar, it's taken after the Game of Thrones Red Wedding for the opening salvo of its aggression against Iran under the Operation Rising Lion. The real-life Red Wedding saw more than 200 Israeli Air Force aircraft participate in the opening strikes, with fighter jets dropping over 330 munitions on some 100 targets, including F-15, F-16, and F-25 fighter jets. They launch hundreds of precision-guided munitions, including JDAMs, Spera missiles, Popeye cruise missiles, and MK-84s. One of the costs that is pretty overwhelming is associated with the fuel needed for the jets. Deploying Israeli F-35s over 1,000 miles to hit targets in Iran costs approximately $10,000 per hour per jet. Keep in mind, this was in addition to the price of precision bombs that we just mentioned. Now, let's bring back our guest, Natalie Strecker, human rights activist. Natalie, let's switch to another war that Israelis are waging. Some are calling, rightly so, a genocide. How are the Israelis profiting from this genocide? Let's talk about it. The latest report submitted by Francesca Albanese, a special rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territories, lists 48 corporations and institutions, including Plantier Technologies Incorporated, Lockheed Martin, along with banks and financial firms as BlackRock, insurers, real estate firms, and even charities, which in violation of international law are making billions from the occupation and the genocide of Palestinians. Would you please unpack that for us?
Well, I think Francesca Albanese is absolutely right, you know, that, you know, she refers to there being an economy of genocide. You know, people are profiting from the genocide, which I would argue, and many commentators are stating, and human rights individuals, that it's a genocide that has evolved into a Holocaust. We are witnessing a deliberate attempt to exterminate an ethnic group. And this is the thing, and this is the problem we have, right? Whilst we have this economic system, you know, war has become its own industry. And as I said previously, I think it's something like 620 plus billion have been made just in 2023 on the backs of war, you know, the global arms industry. And this is money bankrupt, but, you know, there's so many other things that the whole system, the whole structure is set up to support this. And obviously the danger, which is Francesca Albanese expresses within her report and is clearly abundant to anybody who's been paying attention. And actually, it was an argument I made with the Tory MP who I took on a tour of Palestine in El Khalil in 2018 when I was serving there as a human rights monitor. And it's that when we allow international law to become irrelevant, it endangers the lives of all of us. And so what you are witnessing now, which is what Francesca alludes to, is this total undermining of international law. And of course, we do that at our own peril.
But those aren't the most expensive military equipment to be used on an application basis. The most expensive burden is the interception of Iranian missiles and drones, which ran into tens or even hundreds of millions daily. Systems like the Arrow 2 and 3 systems, as well as the U.S. THAAD system, the interception cost each is between $700,000 and $4 million. They were activated repeatedly in response to over 1,000 missiles launched by Iran. The high cost of this war and military equipment was reflected by economist Z.V. Eckstein, who said that this war is far more expensive than Gaza or Hezbollah. He said the ammunition, defensive and offensive, is the big expense. Now comes the U.S. use of its military equipment. The United States used a combination of B-2 Spirit stealth bombers carrying GBU-57 massive ordnance penetrator, or MOP, bunker buster bombs, and Tomahawk cruise missiles launched from submarines in its attack on Iranian nuclear facilities. The operation, codenamed Midnight Hammer, targeted the Fordo uranium enrichment plant, then Natanz nuclear facility, and the Isfahan Nuclear Technology Center. And finally, according to a study by Responsible Statecraft, many U.S.-Israeli hawks promoted this war, and it was concluded it was due to their association with military manufacturers and the military industry. Many were funded by the U.S. military industry, which stood to gain from this shift to a hot war between Israel, the U.S., and Iran. One by one, these guests lined up on White House TV screens to praise Israel's strikes and urge further U.S. involvement. Now let's bring back our guest, Ed Opperman, president of the Opperman Investigations and Digital Forensic Consulting. Mr. Opperman, again, let's switch back to another war that Israelis are waging right now. The latest report submitted by Francesca Albanese, a special rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territories, lists 48 corporations and institutions, including Plantier Technologies Incorporated, Lockheed Martin, along with banks and financial firms such as BlackRock, insurers, real estate firms, and even charities, which in violation of international law and making billions from the occupation and the genocide in Gaza. Your thoughts on that?
We clearly see the influence of these companies in foreign policy decisions. Palantir, for Peter Thiel from Palantir especially, we've seen him and his influence in the rise in the career of Vice President J.D. Vance. We've seen him create this figure and support him and prop him up into place. So he must have a huge influence over these decisions. They're known as the PayPal Mafia. Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, Reid Hoffman, and Palantir CEO, Alan Karp. He was president of Saudi Arabia alongside Larry Flank from BlackRock. You mentioned BlackRock. They were all there in Saudi Arabia when Qatar is cutting this big giant check for $1.2 trillion. Well, who are they cutting that check to? We see the companies, the representatives. The president of BlackRock, Larry Flink, is not there on vacation. He's there to get a piece of that $1.2 trillion. So all of these people are eating from the same table. They're eating from this table of genocide, like you said. And then you mentioned real estate development. The president of the United States today, Mr. Donald Trump, is a real estate developer. That's his background. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, runs a real estate development company. He's spoken openly about developing this land. Developing this land, okay, this war-torn land they see it as a potential for profit that is soaked in blood of civilians, innocent women, children, and the elderly. Their only motivation, these people, is greed and profit.
comes to wars, Donald Trump ran on a platform of ending them. Yet he has started two wars, three really, Iran, Gaza, and Yemen. Or is it four if you count Ukraine? Anyways, all of this points to how the U.S. military-industrial complex is exhilarated to have such a president in the White House. The proof of a war-minded president is also evident in the trillion-dollar military budget the U.S. approved. I'm Kyoresh Bunamati, and I'll see you next week.
What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Musavi, and what we do in this program is to listen to certain viewpoints of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi, who was the great founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and then try to shed light and talk about some of these beautiful viewpoints. About the concept of oppression, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, "It is our divine duty to oppose oppression in all its forms and to support the oppressed." Well, Imam Khomeini's statement here reflects a core principle in Islam, and it is rooted in justice, or what we call as adl, and activism against tyranny. From a Shia and Muslim perspective, standing against oppression is not just a moral obligation, but it is also a divine duty that is mandated by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The Holy Book of Quran emphasizes the importance of justice and opposing oppression. For example, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala commends the believers and says, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim." Indeed, Allah commands you to render trust to whom they are due, and when you judge between people, to judge with justice. Excellent is that which Allah instructs you. Indeed, Allah is ever hearing and seeing. Surah An-Nisa, verse number 58. So similarly, again, the Holy Book of Quran condemns tyranny and says, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim." وَلَا تَرْكَنُوا إِلَى الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا فَتَمَسَّكُمُ النَّارِ. And do not favor the wrongdoers, lest the fire should touch you. Surah Al-Hud, verse number 113. You see, these verses underscore the obligation to stand against injustice. And Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and the other infallible imams, like Imam Ali alayhi salam, exemplified the resistance against oppression as well.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Tahan Nabi wa alihi
sallallahu alayhi
salli ala
Imam Ali alayhi salam famously said, support the oppressed and help the weak. By saying that, he wanted to illustrate the spiritual and social obligation to aid the oppressed and oppose tyranny. And Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi, inspired by these teachings, emphasized that resisting oppression aligns with divine will. His leadership aimed at establishing justice and upholding human dignity, and it echoed the Shia belief that fighting tyranny is a sacred duty. The concept is deeply embedded in Islamic theology, which advocates active resistance to injustice in front of lots of tyrannical governments.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
There was a spring of truth, a selection of Imam Khomeini's viewpoints.
Say that love strikes only once, that precious moment I offer you. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of hope? Where is the shining moon? Where is the firmest road? You are my guiding light that walks me through the night. Your presence gives me strength, gives vision to my sight. Someday faith will increase, someday our wars will cease. Someday there'll be justice, someday there will be. Everything I possess, I offer you. I wanna be someone whom you can trust. Come save us from a world that's so unjust. Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of hope? Where is the shining moon?
In the early hours of June 13th, an unprovoked and shocking escalation shook West Asia. With the backing of the United States, Israel launched a coordinated assault on Iranian territory, striking residential neighborhoods in Tehran, military facilities, and most provocatively, nuclear sites in Natanz and Isfahan. The attack marked the beginning of a 12-day war that would alter regional geopolitics and leave both aggressors, Israel and the U.S., scrambling to reframe a campaign that failed to meet its strategic goals. The first day was particularly deadly for Iran. Not only did it lose top generals and nuclear scientists, but the country was forced to react while it was on the verge of entering the sixth round of nuclear talks with the U.S. The pretense of diplomacy was shattered by bombs. By nightfall on June 13th, Iran responded with waves of drone and missile strikes, targeting Israeli military and intelligence sites deep inside the occupied territories. While American officials initially distanced themselves, claiming Israel had acted independently, their true role became clear when on June 22nd, the U.S. directly struck nuclear facilities in Natanz, Isfahan, and Fordo, deploying bunker-busting munitions designed to target Iran's most secure underground enrichment sites. Washington framed this as an effort to prevent Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons, a claim hollowed by their own intelligence findings and IAEA reports just weeks earlier, confirming Iran had no current weaponization plans. In reality, the dual assault by Israel and the U.S. appeared to have a different goal: regime change. Western media floated the son of the deposed Shah as a government-in-waiting, complete with a televised day-after plan. Assassinations of key IRGC commanders and pressure on military officers to defect revealed the extent of this ambition. But instead of toppling the Islamic Republic, these efforts sparked a wave of national unity across Iran.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!
Civilians rallied behind the leader of the revolution, not out of blind loyalty, but because they viewed the attacks as targeting Iran itself, not just its leadership. The scope of Iran's retaliation was devastating and unprecedented. For 12 continuous days, Israeli cities like Tel Aviv, Haifa, and Be'er Sheva were hit repeatedly. The famed Iron Dome was overwhelmed. According to Hebrew media, the financial and infrastructural damage sustained in this short span matched 20 months of war in Gaza, Syria, and Lebanon. A third of Tel Aviv was reportedly in ruins. For the first time in decades, Israeli settlers fled en masse, smuggling themselves out through Cyprus and Egypt as the government restricted departures. Iran suffered serious losses. Over 600 lives, including civilians, military personnel, and nuclear scientists, but paradoxically gained political capital. Its portrayal as a victim of premeditated aggression, particularly as it was preparing for diplomacy, resonated internationally. Russia openly criticized the IAEA's bias and the reckless nature of U.S.-Israeli strikes. Foreign Minister Lavrov underscored how no evidence existed that Iran was preparing to attack Israel, contrary to the narratives pushed in Western capitals. In response to what it deemed as the IAEA's complicity, the Iranian Majlis voted to suspend cooperation with the nuclear watchdog. Inspectors would only be allowed into Iran if the security of nuclear facilities was guaranteed, a prerogative now tightly guarded by Iran's Supreme National Security Council. This marked a significant shift. Iran no longer saw benefit in cooperating with institutions it viewed as compromised. Even more telling was Iran's rapid internal control. Over 700 individuals were arrested for espionage or collaboration with Israel, and a few were executed for smuggling equipment used in assassinations. These actions reflected Iran's belief that the war extended beyond military engagement. It was existential, targeting its sovereignty and survival. Back in Washington, Trump faced political blowback. His decision to attack Iran mid-negotiation and its threats to assassinate Iranian leaders alienated global partners. Iran's retaliatory strike on the U.S. base in Qatar, the largest American base in West Asia, was a direct humiliation. This followed a precedent set in 2020 when Iran bombed al-Assad base in Iraq after Trump's order to assassinate General Qasem Soleimani. Once again, American military might was exposed as vulnerable. Despite his bluster, Trump found himself politically cornered. His approval rating dropped to 41%, with key voters questioning why he reignited conflict when his platform had promised disengagement from wars in Ukraine and Gaza. Simultaneously, Trump attempted to soften his stance, offering prayers for Iran and hinting at a new diplomatic deal. It was a staggering reversal. In Israel, Prime Minister Netanyahu claimed victory, insisting the war had achieved its objectives, decapitating Iran's nuclear program and fostering regime change. But both goals collapsed under scrutiny. The nuclear decapitation failed outright. Iran successfully moved 400 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium from Fordo before the strikes. The U.S. intelligence assessment later admitted that the operation only set Iran's program back by a few months, contradicting Trump's claims of obliteration. Israeli assessments were even more optimistic, claiming delays of years. Yet, with key facilities intact and materials secured, Iran retains the ability to rebuild and even accelerate its program. Its withdrawal from IAEA cooperation suggests it might do just that. Regime change? Not only did it not occur, but it also backfired spectacularly. The assassinations, rather than demoralizing Iran's elite forces, galvanized public opinion. Even Iranians opposed to the regime found themselves siding with the IRGC, not out of newfound loyalty, but out of patriotic duty. They saw a foreign war against Iran itself. Israel's symbolic attacks on Evin Prison, the Doomsday Clock, and the IRIB broadcaster only added to the perception that this was a war to destroy the Iranian nation, not liberate it. The war left Israel isolated, vulnerable, and weakened in regional and global perception. The economic cost was staggering. The myth of Israeli invincibility cracked as Iranian missiles reached deep into its heartland. The famed anti-missile system ran low on interceptors. The military failed to neutralize Iran's retaliation, and Netanyahu's political image suffered, not from lack of aggression, but from strategic failure. In Washington, Trump's credibility took a massive hit. His erratic shift from war threats to peace offers cast doubt on any future negotiations. Allies in Europe privately distanced themselves from U.S. policy, while regional actors in the Persian Gulf grew anxious. Trump did not unite the world behind Israel. If anything, his reckless approach widened divides and hardened opposition. At the core of this war lies a long-standing delusion that external force can impose regime change in Iran or destroy its nuclear capabilities permanently. Israel and the U.S. misread Iran's domestic resilience. They believed that economic strain and internal dissent would translate into regime collapse under military pressure. But history has repeatedly shown that Iranians unite in times of national crisis, from the Iran-Iraq war to the economic war and sanctions era. This latest war only reinforced that pattern. The second failure lies in underestimating Iran's nuclear resilience. Its program is not centralized in one facility, but is widely dispersed, deeply buried, and increasingly indigenous. The relocation of enriched uranium ahead of the strikes showed a level of strategic foresight that eluded both Tel Aviv and Washington. Moreover, Iran's technological capacity means that even severe damage can be repaired and often rebuilt better. Finally, the war proved that military solutions cannot replace diplomacy. bombs cannot dismantle ideals or erase national will. Iran's response was calculated, precise, and avoided escalation beyond what was necessary. Yet it was devastating enough to shake the very foundations of Israeli and American confidence in their technological dominance. The 12-day war between Iran and Israel, backed by the United States, exposed the limits of military power and the enduring strength of political will. Far from collapsing, Iran emerged bruised but emboldened, internationally vindicated, domestically united, and militarily validated. Israel suffered a psychological and material blow unlike anything in its modern history. The United States, once a hegemon in the region, now finds itself distrusted, its leadership viewed as reckless and inconsistent. As the dust settles and both sides enter a tense pause, one thing is clear. Wars born of hubris rarely achieve their intended outcomes. The pursuit of regime change and the dream of a nuclear-free Iran, enforced by force, may have finally run their course. What replaces it, diplomacy, deterrence, or further confrontation, will shape the region for years to come.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 11,740 kilohertz for Southern Africa. An FM 91.5 MHz for Iran. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
Greetings once again, dear listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran, the vibrant capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Here's what's waiting for you next on your radio station. We'll bring you the very latest updates. It's time for our news segment this hour. Stay informed with the top headlines and breaking stories from around the world. After this, prepare for profound insights with Minbar. In this program, we present selected excerpts from the speeches of the renowned Islamic scholars, covering a wide range of topics including ethics, theology, Quranic interpretation, Islamic history, and at times, social and political issues. Minbar brings the voices of the pulpit to life, timeless words that inspire thought, faith, and action. Following this program, we have another segment of radio productions for this hour. We sincerely hope you enjoy it. Finally, we present leaders' speech. Listen to English translations of the selected segments and speeches by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on various occasions. A concluding moment of guidance and reflection. Up next is news this hour. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's foreign ministry has rejected the legitimacy of the so-called snapback mechanism, calling it a baseless political lever aimed at intensifying confrontation with Tehran. More civilians are killed in Gaza as the Israeli military presses ahead with its genocidal war against Palestinians in the occupied territory. And the US President Donald Trump says his country will send Patriot air defense systems to Ukraine as his mediation efforts with Russia failed. Live from Tehran, I am Bahman Nouri, and this is News. Iran's foreign ministry has rejected the legitimacy of the so-called snapback mechanism, calling it a baseless political lever aimed at intensifying confrontation with Tehran.
So what is called as the snapback? There is no legal or political ground. I've announced this time and again. Now, considering the developments that have happened the past few weeks, more than any other time, resorting to that mechanism is baseless, legally, morally, politically. It's solely a lever that they're trying to use.
Baghai warned that any attempt to invoke it will be met with a measured and proportionate response from Iran. He reiterated that Iran still considers itself a party to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, known as JCPOA. He emphasized that Tehran started to reduce its commitments only after clear and repeated violations by the US and other signatories. He further noted that European parties themselves failed to honor the JCPOA obligations, committing severe breaches and rendering themselves unqualified to invoke enforcement mechanisms within the agreement.
What we saw was civilians bore the brunt, actually. 8,200 residential units have been destroyed, 400 of them totally destroyed, and 8,200 units need repair. So we had 126 women among our martyrs and 41 children, and none of them were members of the armed forces. These are the photos of the children you can see here, and this is part of the civilians we removed from under rubble.
During the same press briefing, Iran's Red Crescent chief presented harrowing details on the humanitarian toll of Israeli acts of aggression against Iran. Kolivand confirmed that five rescue workers were deliberately targeted and martyred while performing emergency relief operations. One of the organization's ambulances also took a direct hit, killing the aid worker inside. He added that such Israeli attacks on health and rescue teams were not isolated incidents, but parts of a broader pattern of violations. He noted that international observers, including the head of the International Committee of the Red Cross, have described the Israeli attack on Iran's civilian infrastructure as shocking and disturbing, underscoring the urgent need for accountability. Ambassadors from 28 countries have visited the charred remains of Iran's national broadcaster's iconic glass building that was struck by Israel during a live news broadcast last month. The attack on IRIB, widely condemned as a war crime and an assault on press freedom, has sparked an international solidarity movement and highlighted the resilience of Iranian journalists. Gisum Shahmadi has more in this report.
Charred ruins mark the site where Israeli missiles struck IRIB's iconic glass building during a live news broadcast just weeks ago. Ambassadors from 28 nations, alongside Iranian officials and journalists, touring the devastated site. As head of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, IRIB, recounts the horrific attack.
Today, the iconic glass building of IRIB is being visited by ambassadors from friendly nations. But we would have welcomed the presence of diplomats from countries that support Israel.